Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
A lot of people engaging with the details about the same-sex marriage debate, and more than in previous weeks. It's very interesting to me. You start to get a feeling of momentum that people are saying, well, hang on a minute, we want to ask questions about what would this be like? What would it mean? What would be the consequences for different groups in the society if the Marriage Act was changed to include same-sex couples? That has to be a good thing, that people are asking questions. So this whole religious freedom question continues to be a serious consideration, certainly for us here at this program and for many in the Christian community. Tonight on Open House, earlier, we spoke with Mark Dreyfus. Now, he's Labor's Shadow Attorney General.
That Senate committee reported in February this year, it was an all-party committee from which one can take that the Labor members, the Labor senators on that committee, the Liberal National Party senators on that committee, and I think a couple of independent senators, crossbench senators on that committee, all agreed on the recommendations of the report, and significantly those recommendations, which are a compromise of course, recommended that there should be substantial protection in respect of religious people and religious bodies if there is to be legislated in Australia a change to the Marriage Act.
Well, Liberal Senator David Fawcett from South Australia is the Deputy Government Whip in the Senate, and he was the chair of that Senate Select Committee that Mark Dreyfus was just referring to. It tabled its report in February. Welcome to Open House.
Good evening. Can I start off by saying that the comments that certainly Mr. Dreyfus made and a number of other people have raced out and made about the committee's report don't reflect what the report said in full. It is true that on a few areas we reached consensus around some things that we could agree on, and that this largely went to the issue of protections for ministers of religion, and we did look at some new categories for marriage celebrants who had a religious faith. But there was also consensus, and this is the part that Mark overlooked and other people who have raced out and said that this was a consensus report that supported same-sex marriage. They overlooked two other really important areas of consensus. The first was that Australia is under no obligation to change the definition of marriage under international jurisprudence from human rights law.
So there is an international civil and...
It's the International Civil and Political... International Covenant.
That's the word I'm looking for, covenant.
What it does in Article 23, it talks about the right to found a family, and it attributes that right to a man and a woman. And when they have considered a challenge against a state, in fact it was New Zealand, by somebody who wanted same-sex marriage, what they came back with was a decision that if a nation had a system to recognise and protect same-sex same-sex relationships, then they were not being discriminatory and there was no lack of equality. And the European Court of Human Rights has had about five, maybe six now, decisions which have been almost identical, which go to the point that if a nation has that system that recognises and protects same-sex relationships, then there is no obligation because there is no discrimination and no lack of equality by not redefining marriage. So that's a really important start.
Right, so this was the finding of the committee that, in fact, there is no discrimination in Australia because we have those property laws and other laws that allow for de facto, in fact, recognition of same-sex marriages?
That's correct. And where that intersects with this whole discussion is that under international law, which Australia has signed up to, you can only derogate a human right, so in this case Article 18, which is the right to hold and manifest a belief, if it intersects with another human right, and then you have to try and find a balance.
Right.
So if we've established, and as I say, this is a consensus view of the committee, that Australia having that parallel system does not intersect with Articles 2 or 26, which are equality and discrimination, then there is no basis upon which you can limit religious freedom, either the holding of a belief or the manifestation of a belief. So that's a really important grounding context, if you like, to have this discussion under. Because at the moment, the other thing the committee found was that Australia has never actually legislated at either a state or a federal level for Article 18. We have anti-discrimination laws, so we've got the Sex Discrimination Act at the Commonwealth level, and then each state and territory has its version of an anti-discrimination piece of legislation, all which vary, by the way, which is one of the issues. Mm-hmm. But the committee found that because there was this lack of legislation specifically around Article 18, that there were real gaps, and particularly for individuals, because Article 18 doesn't only apply to organisations like churches. It is, at its heart, an individual right. And Australia works on the basis of exemptions within anti-discrimination law, and individuals get very poor, if any, protection.
Yes, the exemptions go to things like Christian schools and organisations run by Christian faith groups. So let's ask about something that was just asked of us on the on our SMS service. Someone said, well, if there's a person who's serving at a marriage reception house, this is an individual, and they don't want to endorse same-sex marriage for religious purposes, will they be forced to continue serving at that wedding, if it was a gay wedding, same-sex wedding? I imagine the answer to that is quite plainly yes, because under Australian law, that person has no protection.
That's correct. So at the moment, that is the case, and certainly we had a range of evidence to the committee. Some people who said there should be no exemptions, not even for ministers of religion, through to the majority, I would say, both proponents and opponents of same-sex marriage, who agreed in the centre ground that, yes, at least ministers of religion should have an exemption. And then we went through to those who were saying, well, in actual fact, the baker and the florist, etc., should have an exemption. Most of the people who are proponents of same-sex marriage object quite violently at the thought of people having an exemption for a business service.
Yes.
But I do note in the context of this plebiscite that as we speak, there's been a campaign launched by a group of people within the marketing industry, and I think the name of that campaign is Say No to No.
That's right.
And they're essentially encouraging businesses not to provide services to people who support traditional marriage.
Yeah, they're saying we won't take a brief for advertising or marketing from a no campaign in the debate. So that's an interesting turn of events. But let me ask you, though, David Fawcett, why should the person who serves drinks at a wedding reception house, why should they have the right to refuse service to people on the basis of their marital status?
Or
their sexuality.
Yeah, the case that was brought to us by one witness during the inquiry tried to explain this difference in that they cited the case of a florist in America who had very good relations with a client who was gay, and she'd supplied him with flowers for quite some time. In fact, they were friends, essentially.
Yes.
But when it came to his wedding, she said, look, I'm really sorry, I don't support the institution of same-sex marriage, and therefore I won't provide you flowers for that, but I'll keep providing you flowers at any other time. Now, he, as I understand it, he actually accepted that, but it was the state authorities who then took her to court, and she went through a legal process because of that. Mm. And one of the explanations is that the gender identity is a protected attribute under anti-discrimination law, and so it's illegal to discriminate against somebody on the basis of their identification as a same-sex attracted person.
Yes.
But the institution of marriage, so the institution being different to that protected attribute, is something that is one of the areas that the committee did reach consensus on and that we couldn't agree. The consensus was it's an area of law where we could not agree as a committee on the way forward, with some people saying we should extend that protection to people providing services, and others saying, no, that's a step too far.
Now, I presume, and we'd like to get to the base argument of things, and, you know, we're pretty anti-rhetoric here. So getting to the base argument of it, I presume that the discussion there is around, if I attend, and I've seen Christians arguing, if I attend your wedding, it means that I'm part of that group of witnesses that is before God agreeing to the wedding, and part of the wedding service actually says that. So if you don't want, if you feel that you're in your conscience providing a service or even attending a wedding is contrary to your understanding of the scriptures, then there's a conscientious objection. But you can understand, can't you, the people that don't people that don't follow those views, people with a different view of the scriptures or people who have no scriptural view at all, would say, well, why can't she supply the flowers? I mean, what difference does it make? How is it endorsing a marriage if you're providing flowers?
And Stephen, I think one of the things that came out very clearly through this inquiry was that people who were supporting the change to the definition of marriage were highlighting the fact that, that the sexual identity was very much part of the person. But there seemed to be a lack of understanding both within some of those advocacy groups and even within groups like the Law Council or the Human Rights Commission as to the importance of religious faith to people and the fact that somebody's faith actually also defines them and how they act. And there was almost a reluctance on behalf of many to accept that the two were comparable in terms of the importance to people.
What you're saying is if a person says, my sexuality defines me and I want you to accept me for what I am, a same-sex attracted person, and if the other says, my relationship with God defines me and I want you to accept me as a person who loves you as Jesus would but can't accept your homosexual attraction as not being contrary to God's law, I want you to accept me as a Christian. The other saying, I want you to accept me as a same-sex attracted person. Well, we have a real disconnect, don't we?
Well, I think it actually, to my mind, goes more to the institution of marriage. You know, I think in terms of, you know, there's a difference between welcoming and affirming. And, you know, if you want to use a scriptural example, the example of Christ and the woman caught in adultery. You know, he welcomed her, showed her love and grace. Now, he didn't affirm her actions.
That's right.
So there's quite a difference in that.
Well, there is. But a lot of these cases, I just go back to the point about whether the person serving drinks or the one making a cake, are they affirming by providing a service? Well, you know, there are going to be different views of points of view on that. And at some stage in a civil society, we've got to strike a, well, the word you've used it tonight is balance. We've got to strike a balance on these human rights issues. But let's go to the issues of doctrine itself. So Mark Dreyfus earlier said to us, in the case of Christian schools who currently have the right to decline employment on the basis of sexuality, they would still be able to do so, and so there doesn't need, he argued, to be any change to the current discrimination law, even if there was a change to marriage.
Look, that's partly correct. There's already, even under existing law, technical differences between the states. So Queensland, for example, requires the school is controlled by a church body in order for it to have exemptions. But just as we have found in this inquiry that there are some marriage celebrants who are in fact pastors of churches, but they're not recognised denominations,
yes.
So congregationally based churches, you also have schools that are essentially created by a congregation. They start a school, but they're not controlled by a recognised church body. And so in Queensland, those schools don't actually enjoy those exemptions. So to some extent, what Mark says is correct, but what isn't covered by any of the draft bills, including Dean Smith's draft bill that he's put forward, is what the schools actually teach. So in South Australia and New South Wales, for example, their anti-discrimination laws, religious belief and activity are not protected attributes. And what that means is that any action that could be seen as discriminating against someone, even if you have a genuine religious belief that underpins it, it's not a protected attribute, which opens you up to a whole raft of things. And we see already cases like the Evangelical Student Organisation at the University of Sydney, where they were hauled before the anti-discrimination group because they were saying, well, if you want to be a member of ES, you actually have to profess a faith in Christ. And they were told that was discriminatory. We see overseas.
That's not about marriage as such, although, I mean, it is related. And there's a case in Canada, actually, which is interesting. The the university, which has traditional marriage as part of its statement of faith, which students and staff have to sign up to, it's now being told that its students won't be accepted, law graduates won't be accepted as lawyers by the Law Society there, and that's going through the Supreme Court at the moment. So that's an interesting case.
That's correct. And there's a Jewish school in North London at the moment that's facing deregistration because it won't teach the same-sex and gender fluid type theories. And what you see is the approach of state governments becoming increasingly intolerant. So South Australia, as an example, has just issued an edict to its schools, a policy document that makes it very clear at the start that it's a compulsory policy document, and it, they don't call it safe schools, but it's essentially that same approach. And if a principal has a child in the school who is interested to transition in their gender, then A, they have to facilitate it, B, they ask the parents, but if the parents say no, then the principal is instructed by the state government to ignore the parents' wishes and to help that child transition to a different gender.
Yeah.
Now, this goes to this heart of the issue of the fact that we've never legislated for Article 18, because Article 18.4 of the ICCPR says that a state, as in a nation, will ensure that a parent can see to the moral education of their children in accordance with their own beliefs. And so that's why Australia, you know, we've never legislated because we've always had common sense. If you look at things like religious education in schools, in a state school, parents who give their consent, the children go. Parents who don't give their consent, the children go and do something else.
Yes.
Everyone respects each other, both views are legal, and we get along. But what we're seeing with things like this edict in the safe schools is that the parents' right to oversee the moral education of their children is being removed in a very totalitarian way by the state.
And all of these problems, I still point out to you, exist irrespective of the marriage debate, but it has certainly brought them into a sharp relief.
But what I'm showing, though, Stephen, is that the groundwork is being laid at that level of state jurisdictions for the state to override parents' wishes. And what we see in Dean Smith's bill, if you look at the explanatory memorandum, it actually brings up for the first time separating the concept of the solemnisation of a wedding and education around traditional views on marriage.
Yes.
And so some of the witnesses to the inquiry have since written, having read his draft bill, and said, look, by enlivening that separation between the service itself and education, then it starts actually saying, well, if education is not protected, then that can be applied to other organisations.
Yes.
So we see already at an organisational level the groundwork laid, and at an individual level, particularly as I say in South Australia and New South Wales, if you had a parent, for example, who wanted to remove their child from school or from a lesson, just like they do for RE, when it came to teaching that wasn't supporting a traditional view of marriage, then they wouldn't be able to do that because they would have no protection. We see that overseas already.
I feel as though, and you must as well, that much of my professional life I've been arguing about debating questions of religious freedom in this country, and often it's around this matter that you've referred to. There's an international covenant that says that parents are allowed to bring their children up within their religion and have freedom effectively to stand between their children and the state if the state tries to interfere in that. We don't have a strong legislative basis for that in Australia. And I want to ask you, irrespective of the marriage issue, is this something that we need to continue to work at in this country?
Well, yes, it is. And if you go to the executive summary of that report, one of the areas, again, of consensus was that, and I'll read it out, it says, there was a consensus in the evidence received that the right to religious freedom should be positively protected. And that there was a range of potential remedies ranging from anti-detriment provisions or distinct legislative instruments to protect religious freedoms. And the final paragraph, though, I think is important in this discussion. It says, it is, however, clear that should legislation be enacted to change the definition of marriage, careful attention is required to understand and deliver a balanced outcome that respects the human rights of all Australians. If the nation is to continue to be a tolerant and plural society where a diversity of views is not only legal, but valued. And so what that indicates is that this is not just about changing a few words in the Marriage Act. You actually need to go far more broadly. And as I say, predominantly, that is because we've never positively legislated for Article 18. And specifically, it goes to many of our state anti-discrimination laws. And the one that captured Archbishop Porteous, for example, in Tasmania. So
yes,
again,
it's a bit of a shocker.
Writing to parents at schools, at a Catholic school,
that's
just
right.
Putting forward the position that the Catholic Church teaches on traditional marriage.
Mm.
Well, that got caught under Section 17 of their anti-discrimination law, which has a really low bar of offend or insult. And there's now two other pastors that are caught up, or one pastor and one lay preacher, I think, caught up under that. And what it indicates is that the state laws, even while marriage is defined as being a man and a woman federally, are catching people out. If the federal law were to change, then there would be even less protection for people who would then be taken to court. And I know Mr. Dreyfus said that, well, it was dismissed, but what he ignores is the evidence that was presented to the committee that described the cost, both in dollar terms and in lost productivity in the Archbishop's key job and the personal angst of dealing with that claim, which ran for months.
And so you need to have a very low bar for vexatious, to finding vexatious complaints at the very least. But we need to have a much better view on human rights and religious freedoms in this country.
Indeed. So, look, you ask what can we do. You mentioned also I'm the chair of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, and because ICCPR comes under our foreign powers, head of power as a Commonwealth, the Foreign Affairs Committee has a human rights subset to it, and what I've asked Kevin Andrews, who chairs that subcommittee for me, to do is to run an inquiry looking at freedom of religion, both internationally but also domestically. And so what they've been doing for a few months now is going around the country taking evidence from various legal experts and people from churches and others as to what is the current state of religious freedom in Australia, how does it intersect with state law, and then the report they'll deliver back will essentially say what would we need to change to positively protect religious freedoms in the country. So my view is that research, if you like, is being done, and that is something that we would need to put in place before any change were made, in my opinion.
Yep.
I'll be voting no, because I support traditional marriage, but were a change to be made, then, as that consensus report said, there's a lot of work that would need
to be done. There is a lot of work to be done. And for many people, that'll be determinant over whether they vote no or not. For others, there'll be work to be done in the event that there's a yes case. David, thank you for spending so much time with us tonight. I do appreciate that.
Not a problem, Stephen.
Bye-bye now.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.